Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Pettum here, as always, and as always, my good friend Danny Raza is here as well. Danny, how you doing?
Hello, hello. I'm not too bad. I'm doing well. Happy New Year, everybody. It's the first podcast of 2021, isn't it, I believe, Cole?
Yeah, absolutely. What a nightmare I'm having so far, because I absolutely forgot it's 2021. You can tell what kind of mindset I'm in right now. I'm losing track of time and days and basically everything right now. But nonetheless, of course, we're here to chat about Manchester United 2, Aston Villa 1. I'm still not over what transpired yesterday. But Danny, to kind of put it in more of a positive tone to kick things off, I mean, it's a good sign to leave Old Trafford kind of feeling hard done by, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a good performance. Really good performance from Villa. I think just continuing this trend of going to every single game and basically never walking out of it looking like the worst team, regardless of the result. It's been like that for a little while now, even when they lost to West Ham in, I think it was back in November now. Villa just looking like a solid side. Just players look like they're improving. McGinn and Louise, for example, keeping that hold on midfield. We've just got a couple of niggling problems at the moment, which maybe just need to get sorted out, but we're nearly there. To be honest, I don't think many Villa fans would have come out of that match feeling like the team has gone backward in any way whatsoever. In many ways, a game decided by the finest margins. Villa still very much in it with the big teams.
Which is crazy. I think we only slid down to sixth. So, like, I mean, it could be a lot worse in terms of things. But, I mean, if you look at the table overall from, like, I think it's 13th to probably 5th, it's like a matter of points. And maybe even 14th, actually, because I think of Arsenal, who are playing right now on the Saturday. You guys will hear this on the Sunday. I think they can finish on 20 points if they beat West Brom. It just shows how tight things are. So, I'm sure there'll be a lot more movement here in the coming weeks. But like you said there, Danny, it's tough, but it's also pleasing. I mean, I think a lot of things when it comes to Villa games, and I guess a lot of people kind of have in the back of their mind, is how will we start games? And I know traditionally last season, especially, and in previous seasons too, we start off a bit slowly and kind of shoot ourselves in the foot. And I think this was always going to be one of those games where you kind of just dive into it and you have to see where it plays out. You know, United are going to play on the break. They're going to play hard and they're going to play high up the pitch. And they did just that. They had a few opportunities. The defense was easily able to nullify them with a bit of luck, of course, here and there. Of course, you need a bit of that, but nothing to really write home about there. But I guess what's the first thing we should move on to, Danny? I guess we can go right into the first goal conceded, of course, from the Villa side of things. I mean, I don't want to blame Tyrone Mings, because I think when you look back at it, there's literally, I think there's three players tracking back at that same time. So I don't want to say where does the blame lie, Danny, but what could have been done better, I guess?
I think, first of all, you know, I think this comes back to, you know, being wasteful from set pieces sometimes. That is a weakness that we have, to be honest. We are quite wasteful from set pieces. And if Traore doesn't, you know, absolutely ruin that chance, then United don't come back, right? But, you know, I suppose it's a little bit further behind play. I think as well, just, you see the United attacker, I think it's Wan-Bissaka, just running straight down the right. And he's pretty much uncontested. You kind of hope that Villa sort of see this coming a little bit earlier. But, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult. He just finds himself in acres of space. McGinn can't get there quick enough. You expect Mings to get to that. And I have to admit, at first, initially, I would have said that Mings is at fault there. But I think now, you know, looking back at it, he was probably caught a little bit flat-footed. I think somebody else should have been marking Martial there. Or I think Konsa really should know where Martial is as he's coming in. I don't know whether there's been a miscommunication or a shout or whatever. Either way, when there's four defenders in the box, I don't really like seeing those go in.
Yeah, I mean, the way the kind of play was going on that, a lot of players are kind of running straight at goal where, it's easy to say now in hindsight, but you kind of think the defense kind of would have swerved a little bit I guess, to the right, running towards their own goal, just to cut that off. Because if you think, if they run at it more diagonally, I mean, this is literally clutching at straws, but like, if you run at it more diagonally, more chances than none, you're going to stop those balls that are going to come behind you. And it's tough on Mings too. It's forward momentum. You're sprinting all the way back, and to have it go right behind you, it's a tough one. But it's also hard because a lot of people do get on the back of Tyrone Mings. And we've talked about this before, Danny, with all the England stuff. And should he be dropped until he cuts some of the smaller details and smaller bad habits that he has out of his game? And I mean, stupidly enough, I saw a few people on Twitter yesterday saying that we should sell him and think we could do better without him. And I think it's a very irrational thing to say, given what he's done for this club over the last year plus. And I mean, what he does organizationally as well. But I mean, where do you stand with him? Because, like, I mean, I think we have a true gem in Ezri Konsa, and I think it's already evident that Konsa is better than Mings. And people can argue with me that all they want, but I think
an interesting take, Cole.
Yeah,
I mean, that you can't, you don't just say it, you've got to substantiate that now. That's a big take.
Yeah, true. But I just yeah. Now I'm nervous.
I'm putting you back on the back foot here, mate. I gotta ask you why you think that is.
Breaking news. No, I just think if you look at the growth and development of Ezri Konsa in the last, you could probably even say 6 months, it's been absolutely unreal. And I don't know if Mings has hit his peak, but I mean, how old is Mings now? Is he 26, 27?
Yeah, he's 27.
27. So at some point he's going to hit his peak. Maybe he already has, but Ezri's a lot younger. There's a lot more room for improvement. And I think the whole thought of buying him was probably eventually to sell him on, you would imagine, unless we have a lot of good runs and eventually European football and all that kind of stuff. But he just seemed like a much more of a, I guess the ceiling's much higher is what I'm trying to say. I just see with their game, and I'm not really explaining this the best, and I wish I was, but I just see a lot more execution in Konsa's game. With Mings, I find there's a lot of high risk, high reward, and I think we've seen that. I just think the opportunity for Konsa to grow is there versus Mings, where I feel like with Mings, I think we already have the finished package, is what I'm trying to say with this whole rant.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
if people think I'm talking absolute shit, it's fair enough. But yeah, anyways, what are your thoughts?
I think yeah, it's an interesting one. I think Konsa, like you said, he's a good few years younger than Mings, so we don't know where the ceiling is with him. Like he's still very young, but also looks very calm, very composed. Looks like an experienced centre back. Perhaps doesn't have the leadership qualities that Tyrone Mings does. At the moment, you know, you never see Ezri Konsa shouting or trying to organize anything. Tyrone Mings is always that central defensive organizer. I'm a big fan of Tyrone Mings. I think he's a fantastic player, but like you said, there are those little errors and stuff that he maybe needs to sort out. That being said, December, we conceded one goal or something like that. And I think that it's probably not just a Tyrone Mings issue this anyway. And I think Dean Smith is picked up on it as well. But, you know, it's to do with all that slow starting and everything. If everybody was just raised their game a little bit more, if everybody was just a little bit more switched on, I wonder if Villa would have a few more points this season. There was one pass that Jack Grealish made, I think, as well against United that was wayward and kind of like set Bruno Fernandes through. I can't remember who it was. It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right? It happens. But those kinds of things shouldn't be happening. And you've got to be thinking about whether it happens often enough. Anyway, I digress. Courtney House was solid as well when he stepped in for the last couple of weeks. I wonder whether you would have started him. Would he have done any better than Tyrone Mings in that situation? Really, I'm not sure. That being said, we let United score from that and we answer back. Do you know what I mean? It's a fairly even game. It's a fairly even game up until that point. At no point am I thinking United running away with this. They're dominating. Villa answered back against Chelsea. Will they answer back against United? We do.
So. Yeah, and interestingly enough, I mean, it's rather quick too, and it was rather quick right after the half against Chelsea as well. So I think we're starting to build a better sample size in terms that we can comfortably say, like, one more behind, we can get back into it. And it's becoming evident. I think that's another kind of example of growth in this team, and quick growth, if anything. Like, I'm still flabbergasted. This turnaround within the last 6 months is absolutely unreal. And I mean, I guess you could blame the whole kind of COVID kind of break and all that kind of stuff. It gave Dean Smith more time to work with these players, but it just seems like everyone's clicked into the next gear. And I mean, a bit of luck with the Traore goal. I mean, it's kind of the same as the one we conceded, and a lot of people point at Mings, is it just kind of slipped across the box and went through quite a few legs, and it just ended up with Traore. It was still a brilliant piece of movement there, but a bit of fortune again. If you really chalked those out, it probably could have easily been a nil-nil result, Danny, don't you think?
Yeah, but I mean, again, look, this is where you make your luck, and this is where Villa, you know, this is where I'd like to see them improve on. A lot of the time, I see a lot of the floated balls into the box, right, where, you know, Watkins can't quite jump high enough, or it kind of goes over people. That cross from Grealish was pinpoint, and Villa had like three men in the box right there, and that's something you wouldn't have seen with other teams of old, you know, having that many men in the box. I think, you know, it's simple mathematics. The more men you have in the box, the more likely you are to, you know, get a touch on it. And I think, you know, it's a classic goal in that sense. So, yeah, very good pass from Grealish. Bertrand Traore happening to be in the right place at the right time. To me, looking like a very good finisher, actually, Traore. Starting to look that way anyway. Maybe perhaps more so than El Ghazi. But, yeah. Good to see Villa answer back there. And again, you know, it was a goal that was coming. It wasn't like Villa were being outplayed at all. And I think second half, Villa came out looking like a very good team, actually. Very comfortable.
Yeah, I think the thing too, and actually this might be actually a good transition point, and I want your thoughts on Ollie Watkins. Do you think he's a little bit tired, Danny? Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's, I wouldn't say it's a lack of confidence, but I don't know if he's a little frustrated with the chances he should be putting away, and it's just not going in for him. He looks a little bit tired to me. I mean, we don't really have another solid option where you go, okay, he could score a few goals. So like, yeah. What are your thoughts on that? Cause I mean, it does kind of leave us in a bit of predicament where we're literally using our best options so much because of the lack of options.
Yeah. I mean, it's starting to look like he's a bit tired. Yeah. And I think it's one of those where perhaps you won't see that if he does manage to get a goal in. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on that young man's head, right? There's a lot of pressure on him. He's coming at a £30 million price tag. He's shown that he's capable, because I'm telling you, average strikers don't score two against Liverpool and hat-tricks against Arsenal. That's not something that average strikers do. The talent is there, but something is just a little bit off right now, and he's not attacking the ball like you would expect a striker to. Do I think he's poor? No, I think he just needs that one goal. I mean, Villa tried that with the penalty, right? It never happened. But then that treatment worked with El Ghazi. But you know, I think the fact of the matter is, though, unfortunately, Cole, I mean, we're in a situation where, you know, he's a £30 million striker. We need those goals being put away. But as long as Villa is scoring, it gives him a little bit more time. It buys him more time. You know, strikers do go on long runs without scoring goals. It's happened before. It's happened to strikers before. Hopefully it won't be long until he does grab one. But you know, little things like Keenan Davis, why is it taking until the 84th minute to bring him on, right? Like, you know that if you want your strikers to score goals, if you want people to kind of sniff the net, basically, like, you can't be giving them 5 minutes at the end to come on and try it. You know, if maybe what it needed for Watkins was a target man to kind of support him up there.
Well, that was the thing that seemed to work as soon as Keenan Davis came on. I mean, he had an opportunity right away, and yes, he should have done better. But to be fair to the amount of lack of game time he's had recently, how quickly you've come on, it did come at him rather quickly as well. It's a lot to expect for someone so quickly. But it seemed, well, I mean, the one right at the end too. I mean, we're skipping over the Pogba thing, but that's going to probably be the biggest thing that we talk about. So we'll get to that shortly. But I mean, he had an opportunity at the end, if it wasn't for, I think it was Eric Bailly that blocked it. And it was a very good block, to be fair to him. I mean, that was probably a goal, and I just dropped my phone. So that's great. Right onto my toe. That felt fantastic. But anyways, yeah, like, it's a little frustrating when, like, do you like the 4-4-2 when we kind of switch it to that? Because, I mean, it's a lot more direct. There's support for Watkins. But I almost wonder, what if you keep it as a 4-3-3 and you put Watkins out wide and see what happens there? Like, what are your thoughts there?
No, I mean, I think different games require different solutions. And I think sometimes we need to go more direct. Sometimes Watkins will find it a little bit difficult to kind of get himself into the box, especially if his job is to run the lines, right? Like, what, you know, maybe if Davis comes on earlier, you have a target man next to him, you have some more support closer to him, somebody can kind of pick him out or drop it down to him, or alternatively he sets them up. It's just a little bit different, I guess, but I suppose that's just not the way that Smith likes to play football. We've talked about this a lot. He has his way, and I think even with Grealish playing as a number 10, he never really looks like he's playing that high up the pitch, so it still seems like Watkins can be a little bit on his own at times. But Cole, like you said, man, glossing over Pogba, aren't we?
Yeah.
Should I do that before? Should we talk about that before we go too far into
what
happened at the end?
Let's do it. I mean, oh my God. So I've talked to, I think, 4 United fans about this. 1 out of the 4. I mean, small sample size, keep in mind. 1 out of the 4 admitted on Twitter to me that they believed it wasn't a penalty. They just said they basically called it as they see it. Like, if that was basically their whole kind of justification was like, you'll take it obviously if it's given. I mean, who wouldn't? But like, realistically, it's not a penalty. So the best way I can explain this is Pogba's on the edge of the box, running just inside the box. Douglas Luiz is right beside him, really not all over him, not mauling him, but just really running beside him. If you look down and breaking down to slow motion, Pogba's running. So is Dougie Luiz. Pogba's leg kind of kicks the back of Dougie Luiz, which apparently people are calling that a foul. I don't really understand how the attacking player could kick someone's leg and then fall, and that's a foul. But anyways, shortly after that, he tries to regain it and then kicks his own foot, his other foot, and then falls down.
Yeah, so the key thing is, though, that does Douglas make contact to Pogba's leg to cause that?
No. Like that's the issue. Like, okay, it touches.
But that's what VAR sees. VAR looks at that and goes, "Well, Douglas Luiz's leg does catch Pogba's leg, but
it's Pogba hitting Douglas Luiz's leg. It's not Douglas Luiz hitting Pogba. You know what I mean? Like,
listen, I didn't think it was a penalty, right? So
it reminds me so much of the Bruno Fernandes one last season at Villa Park, where they literally I think it was Konsa too. I think. Where he literally stepped on Konsa's leg. And I'm thinking, how do you, like, you know what I mean? It's
That one was ridiculous, that one. Yeah.
Manchester United, that's all I can say.
I understand the argument for this one. That's what I'm saying. I do understand the argument for this one. But what my issue is, you know, just watching as a Villa fan, is that how do we manage to get on the wrong side of these all the time? Right? Because The first thing that I thought of when United get this penalty and the decision isn't overturned is that, like, well, yeah, I understand that it needs to be a clear and obvious error. And technically, that should work, right? Technically, if it's not clear and obvious, if it is deemed that it could be a penalty, then fine. I kind of get that. Yeah, I understand the officiating there. But I cast my eyes back to the Solly March and Trezeguet thing. And it's like, well, we didn't get a penalty for that. We had a penalty removed because even though Solly March catches Trezeguet, so are you telling me that if there's any form of contact, it has to be a penalty? Because which is it?
Well, it's like the Palace thing last year with Lansbury. Like,
no, let's not go back to the Sellers.
No, let's not do that. It's
that's different.
It's different, but it's in the same context of, like, I don't understand it. So obviously, it goes back down to the referee to make the final call. I believe that's how it was played out. Danny, honestly, I'm getting to the point now. I almost wonder when it goes from the referee making the decision, goes to VAR review, and then VAR comes back and says, okay, go have a look at the screen. I'm seriously wondering with some of these refs, if it becomes, when it comes to that third stage, if they just sometimes, depending on the ref, upheld it because they don't want to look like an idiot because they made that initial call.
I don't think that's an issue, because I think with something like that, you know, you have to get used to it, right? And at the end of the day, You want to make sure the decision is right. You don't want any controversy as a referee. You don't want that. As much as controversy follows them. But yeah, I feel like that had to be a go look at it incident. It had to be a go check it out on the screen type incident. You know, because otherwise, in the back of the referee's head, it's just, well, okay, fine. It's probably okay. But I don't understand. I don't understand how VAR have looked at that and given the penalty. But yeah. Whatever. I'm just salty about it. I just feel like Villa worked really hard, probably deserved a little bit more out of the game, and to get undone by that was just a bit, it just felt like a bit of a kicker, especially because of the Bruno Fernandes incident in the last game. It's just you know, they'll feel a bit hard done by.
Well, see, I don't know. Maybe this could be my second hot take of the episode, and maybe I'll make more sense with this one. But, to be honest, if that's United City and maybe a couple other teams in this league, that's going to be called. If it's us or probably the majority, it's probably going to be reversed. I just honestly, I feel like there's a bias there. I just feel like something's present where it's almost like you have to appeal to some higher power with some of
these. I'm sure there isn't. But I think for fans of teams that aren't, you know, doing as well as them, if they have had their fair share of VAR decisions go against them, you know, that's how it will begin to look. But, you know, then again, you look at teams like Liverpool, who, to be fair to them, have had a lot of decisions go against them. United, for whatever reason, have had a lot of reasons go for them, but they haven't always been doing this well. You know what I mean? It's not, I don't think it's a biased thing. I think it's what happens is it needs to come down to consistency. And at the end of the day, there hasn't been that consistency. And I think we're still waiting for the whole VAR system to just level out a little bit more. Because I think for some people, there's a perception that one week it's one rule and the next week it's another.
I think really it is. There's no consistency with this whole system. It seems like for maybe one match week, it seems like everything goes fine, and then it's a different set of rules 3 weeks later. There needs to be a balance of, okay, this is going to go this way. This is going to be the decision. If this maybe needs to be looked at, there just needs to be a better framework. I feel like the framework's so flexible where it just doesn't fit as it should, I guess, if that makes sense. But nonetheless, let's get on from that. Of course, Bruno Fernandes scores the penalty. The other thing I will say, Danny, quickly, and if you want to give your thoughts on this after, I find it hilarious when, especially United fans who make compilations of Jack Grealish, put the United shirt on him all the time and say he's coming there as soon as possible, call him a diver. And I'm thinking you have your star man, Bruno Fernandes, is all over the floor all the time. And I think I don't know who United played before us. If you know, feel free to let me know. But I swear there was a passage of play where Fernandes was literally running with the ball and then just fell over and held his ear. And in the replay, like, there was no hand that even came near his head. And he's holding it like he literally just got stabbed in the ear. And I'm thinking, I'm getting abuse on Twitter because some guy is saying, oh, well, that is a penalty. And they gave you guys all the decisions when Jack Grealish was diving 20 times. I'm thinking there's a difference between Jack Grealish using his body to shield the ball outside of the box and create a play versus, and Nemanja Matić getting somehow 20 fouls without actually getting carded. And then literally Paul Pogba, yeah, who trips and then tells Luke Shaw to dive.
The fouls thing, actually, you know, in the United Villa game, that was very frustrating, especially the last 10 minutes. It felt as though Villa couldn't move the ball forward without being brought down. And I don't know at what point professional fouls or persistent fouling gets given a yellow. But Bruno made a lot of fouls in that game.
Yeah.
It just felt like it was going to take forever to get any of those guys carded. I felt noticed, a bit weird.
Did you notice when we try to take a quick free kick, they block it off every time? Like, does that not eventually be your?
No, we do that too. Villa do that as well.
As much as that, though,
El Ghazi's the main guy to do that kind of stuff.
Maybe I don't catch it enough. Fair enough, but it feels
you don't felt because like, it's because it, when it's your team, you don't notice these things.
Yeah, true. That's fair enough. But anyway, should we get to the end? Should we get to the heartbreaking bit where we thought Big Keenan was gonna slide it away and become a hero? Or what?
No, I never thought it was going to happen. I would have loved it if it did. It has to be more than 6 minutes at the end, Dino. Like, give, you know, because in those last few minutes, to be fair, teams like United, they'll pass it around and just, like we saw before, just foul Villa into oblivion. You know, the impetus has to be there 10, 15 minutes beforehand. Not in the last 6 minutes, man.
Yeah.
What's the point of making a change of plan that late?
Well, if you think about it this way, so say the 84th minute he came on?
Yeah, 84th.
Yeah, so it's probably going to take him a few minutes to kind of get up to pace, up to speed, and just kind of get your mind right in there fully once you're actually in the pace of a game. Like, it just doesn't, and especially the way the play was going. I mean, it was 50-50 possession at the end of it, and that's another very good stat for Villa and showing how even this game was. I just think you need to bring these guys on in the 70th, at least the 75th, like at the latest. Like, they need like at least 15 minutes to impose some will on this game. Like, honestly, I can't remember, and people feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I can't remember the last time a Villa player came on after the 80th minute as a substitute and scored.
Yeah, neither do I.
Ogazi. Oh, fair enough. But I mean, you do that. You do that for like a youngster to make his debut.
Right, like just Ramsey. To say it. Give him 10 minutes. That's fine. But I think what Dean's worry is that, well, if I take off Traore, I take off El Ghazi. When I lost my creativity, I lost some threat, and the balance of the team is gone. And I understand that argument as well. By the way, speaking of the substitutions, did Traore look a bit angry to you getting brought off for Jacob Ramsey?
Yeah, but I like that, though. That shows a bit of fire. Yeah, like, I want them to be pissed off. I want them to be upset because they know what they can do. And to be fair, like, I mean, you would feel hard done by scoring the goal, and he had it. All right game. I mean, that free kick was probably the worst thing I've ever seen, but Danny, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Like, I don't know. Traore, and I guess you can kind of throw
it was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. You can kind of throw Traore and El Ghazi into kind of the same spectrum in terms of they're going to have that 1 million, like that one kind of second of brilliance. So they're also going to have that 1 second of utter tragedy. Like, they're not going to always be like a 95% superb player. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs with them.
Yeah.
So I mean, you kind of get what you give, especially when
they're not the wingers I'd want straight through on goal, one on one with the keeper.
But I think that's wingers too, traditionally. Unless, I mean, I guess playing Jack out wide's kind of a
Traore is a finisher. I trust him more than Grealish actually, one on one with the keeper.
Well, didn't he play center forward striker at Lyon? So, like, he has experience. So. He can finish. I mean, the one-footed thing is a little frustrating at times, but nonetheless, I mean, he got us back in this game. That's all that matters. It's just, I think to sum it up, really, Danny, it's just unlucky. Like, we didn't do anything really wrong. Like, you can't really be disappointed when you've been probably kind of unjustifiably screwed over a little bit, especially. Like, it's just... I mean, it's how football is. Like, players look for dives, players look for cheap fouls. A lot of things are overanalyzed with technology. It's just the game we live in today.
Attitude's good, though, right? Like, you know, Dean Smith's asked after the game, what do you think of the performance? He doesn't say, like me and you, we both said that, oh, it's good. You know, Villa played well. This is positive. He didn't say that. Dean Smith's first thing was first 15 minutes felt like a testimonial game. We needed to do better. And that's the attitude that Villa need now. I think it's almost switched because last season, you know, we would have got this result and, you know, we'd have been in and around the relegation zone and it had said, well, you know, we're getting there, you know, things are getting... But now, I think what we're seeing is now the team have made really good performances against top sides, you know, won a couple of games really comfortably, shown what they're all about, and there's this belief that they can go on and do a little bit better. So when they come out of a game with nothing, they look back at themselves and think, well, it's not good enough.
Yeah.
We should be doing better than this. Because Villa don't want to be considered amongst the, I don't know, oh, this is going to sound harsh. No, they don't want to be considered amongst the West Broms and the Sheffield United's down the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be considered up there with the Leicesters and the Wolves, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we haven't seen these heights since like 10 years ago, if not more now. Like, it's taken a long time to get back to where a lot of, not even Villa fans, like, I have other friends and that are fans of other clubs that are saying, like, you guys are, I wouldn't say rightfully like where you belong, but like, you guys should be in the upper half of the table, traditionally speaking. It's just nice to see and realize how far we've come in such a quick succession. And I think the one thing that tells us, Danny, is we actually have the foundation and set up the way that we just have been missing and crying out for probably, you could say, 9+, 10+ years. It's just, we're getting things right. It's going to take time. There's going to be times where we probably still lose players for a high dollar value. We bring in new up and comers again. it's a seller's market unless you're Barcelona, Real Madrid, United, Manchester City, et cetera, you're going to find these talents and sell them on eventually for high dollar value. And I think the best part of being a Villa fan right now is that we're seeing these players grow and develop and they're hitting the heights for us. I mean, we could have signed half these players and we could be where West Brom are or where Sheffield United are. I guess long story short is it's just nice to see how far we've come.
Yeah, I think the setup's right. I think more than anything, the setup's right. You know, I've brought in some good coaching staff, got Craig Shakespeare in, who's, you know, almost... It almost seems like he's added an extra element to our game. I'm not sure what that is, but we've definitely seen a lot of improvements since he's come along. I think the scouting and the idea about the players that we need to sign, I think it's all improved. Everything looks so specific now. You know, like before, might as well just mention this real quickly because it's January, right?
Yeah.
You know how like before, see a big player on a free or a big player available, and you think, oh, I'd love him to be at the Villa. I now think, would they work though? Would they work in that system?
Are
they
hard? That's so nice to feel that. Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like Diego Costa's on a free. I don't think he'd work at Villa.
No, that's more of a Wolves signing, I feel like, if anything.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, it's interesting. It's just it's a case of now we are trying to run it like a big franchise club. I think that's probably where Wes Edens has his experience. Well,
I think the best way to kind of sum it up, Danny, is we're buying players to fit the system, not just players to come in and just play for the club.
Mm-hmm, like, exactly.
It's not that player A has, I don't know, is supposed to be bigger than the club. It's the club is bigger than you. You work in the system. Together, we can have success if all the cogs in the machine work correctly. I think that's the best part. But anyways, before we get to our match balls, I'm just going to read out a few of our listener Twitter comments. Of course, if you want to get involved in the future, it's at 7500 Holt. I'll just reach out, read two or three. Gregory Michael says, wouldn't mind seeing the 4-4-2 earlier on in the game. Davis added a physical threat in the box and had chances. Andy Day says their goal was just one of those. Their second was an unjustified penalty. Our goal was superbly worked and summed up the creative, accurate team interplay. Some great passes, neat touches, and well-rehearsed understanding between players, and always looking to go forward. And I'll end it with Darren Cook, who says the difference was there was a, sorry, the difference was that there was sorry, this is not the best English. The difference was that there was a touch quicker going forward, or they were quicker, a touch going forward, I should say. We could easily win it, but lost today. That's a huge positive. Sorry, Darren, I absolutely butchered that, but nonetheless, you guys know what I'm trying to say. But anyways, of course, like I said before, tweet us at 7500 to Holt if you want to get your post-match thoughts read. But anyways, Danny, before we wrap things up, who do you give your match ball to?
I'm going to go Jack Grealish. Played a very good game, caught himself a good assist. And again, you know, just everything seemed to be going through him. I think a fair shout out to John McGinn, who I think did very well in the midfield again. I think he followed up his last week's performance with a very good one as well. But yeah, I think Jack Grealish for me.
Fair enough. I'm going to go differently. Special shout out to Matty Cash, who I really, really... he might be like one of my favorite signings as far as I can remember. Like, he's just so exciting to watch bomb down the right, and how well he can get back and make up and recover is so impressive. So special mention to him, but I'm going to go with Emi Martinez. I think he kept us in the game in certain situations where, I mean, United had a few absolutely clear set goals. I think if that was probably another keeper, again, I think he's been our best signing, and I think he's probably going to prove to be our best goalkeeping signing probably in the last 10 plus years. And I guess maybe that's a bold statement.
Oh, we've had
a few good ones at least, but
I think he's the best keeper I've seen in a Villa shirt since I've started watching, actually.
Could he be the best goalkeeper we've had in the 2000s?
People will argue Friedel, won't they?
Yeah.
Maybe even that one year of Schmeichel.
Maybe too small of a sample size, I guess, for now.
Yeah,
maybe after two seasons, we'll see. But yeah, I have to give it to Emmy. I think it's fair enough. But anyways, Danny, let's wrap things up. But yeah,
dude,
do you have anything?
One quick thing as well, it's just on Matty Cash, because I just remembered because you mentioned it. I think, like, you know, during the Manchester United game, there was a tweet going around that somebody said that he looks like the perfect WWE wrestler. Someone said that he looked like a 3-time Intercontinental champion. And I can't get that image out of my head now.
Holding the $1 million belt.
Oh, yeah, that as well, yeah. Matty Cash.
Holding the money in the bank and has the $1 million belt, all because his last name is Cash.
Exactly. The money in the bank. That's more current.
The Miz would be pissed. I'm sure a lot of people don't know what we're talking about, but anyways, let's wrap it up there, Danny. Of course, big thanks to Danny. As always, if you want to find him on Twitter, it's at Razzajourno. You can find me, Cole Pettum, on Twitter at Talk Aston Villa. Of course, you can tweet the 7500 The Holt team at 7500 The Holt. Email us for whatever reasons you want, of course, at Holtcast@gmail.com. And you know what? If you guys could be so kind, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review. It's always appreciated. It makes basically easier for other people to find us, and it's just really a nice thing to do. And if there's a system for whatever way you're listening to us, feel free to do that as well. Always appreciate it. Let's leave it there. The FA Cup is next weekend against Liverpool, so let's hope that's not karma coming back at us, and hopefully they're not looking for too much of revenge. But anyways, we'll leave it there, and don't forget, up the Villa.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.